NRA TV with Cam Edwards.
We are allowed to act, and in that action, we will do nothing that limits your right to own a pistol, to own a long rifle, or to own a shotgun. All of those rights will still be bestowed and enjoyed for every American, but we're going to be a hell of a lot safer starting now.
It's amazing you couldn't see the nose growing as he was talking, isn't it? Good Tuesday to you. Thank you so much for tuning into another edition of Cam and Company right here on NRA TV. Hey, will regulate a militia being necessary to the security of a free state? The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, which is something that Eric Swalwell says is not going to happen. No infringement on your right to keep and bear arms. And then he starts rattling off all of these policies that would absolutely infringe on your right to keep and bear arms. He wants to ban the most commonly sold rifle in America today. He wants to limit the number of rounds of ammunition that you can possess somehow, or at least purchase per month. He wants to require you to buy insurance in order for you to exercise your Second Amendment rights. He wants the government to license your right before you can exercise it. Yeah. And he made this announcement outside of the, well, across the street and down the road just a little bit. But with the NRA headquarters as his backdrop, Eric Swalwell polling at 0%, hoping beyond hope that the base is going to get excited about his gun control proposals. And you know what? Here's the thing. They may get excited about his proposals. This is the 2020 Democrat disarmament primary, unfortunately. But here's the thing. No matter how anti-gun Eric Swalwell gets, he's really, and this is sad, but he's not going to be outside of the mainstream of every other Democrat who's running for president next year. Because all of them would look at Eric Swalwell and say, yeah, we could do that. Yeah, I could see us adopting those plans. There's really not much daylight between Eric Swalwell, Amy Klobuchar, who's out today calling for more gun control laws, Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden. There's really not much daylight between any of them. Now, here to talk about some of these proposals, very pleased to have with us from the Washington Examiner, Julio Rosas is with us. Julio, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Cam. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So you wrote about Eric Swalwell's press conference outside of NRA headquarters yesterday. It's amazing. He has so many gun control policies, by the way, Julio, that he couldn't even get to them all yesterday at this press conference, because there's some on his website that he didn't mention. Things like that ammunition purchase limit. But let's listen to just a brief bit of Eric Swalwell yesterday getting into his great big gun control agenda.
It's hot out, but that's how we feel about the issue that we're about to address. We are standing outside of the NRA headquarters to say enough is enough. We have a plan to end gun violence. This issue is not about the NRA. But they're in the way. And to believe we don't have to live this way. And if we get this right in the White House and with the next Congress, we won't. And so I want to tell you what our plan does. First, we start and we look at this through the life cycle of a firearm and where we ultimately hope it's used for sport, for hunting, and in the worst imaginable cases, protecting yourself if necessary. There's nothing that we propose here today that is at odds with what this organization claims they stand for.
I really disagree with that, Julio. You know, again, Eric Swalwell says there's nothing objectionable in here. There's nothing that's, contrary to the Second Amendment. There's nothing that, good law-abiding American gun owners wouldn't support. And then he starts rattling off things like, waiting periods, gun bans, mandatory insurance to own a firearm, limits on ammunition, things that every gun owner I know is opposed to.
Right, exactly. And there's once I posted the story onto my Twitter account, a lot of gun owners voiced their opposition to basically almost every part of the plan. And honestly, I have to give props to them because they're it is the most extensive gun control plan I've seen from the 2020 Democrats. The closest I've seen is probably Senator Booker's plan. But Eric Swalwell's plan is probably as long as a CVS receipt. That's how much is in here.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're right. It is very, very detailed. In fact, we've got some video we'll show of the website itself in just a minute. But, the thing is, with how detailed it is and all of these various proposals, 99.9% of them seem to be aimed at people who are currently, right now, legal gun owners. And these are new restrictions on those legal gun owners who are exercising their rights. That right is going to get narrowed down a lot.
Yes, and as you mentioned, probably one of the most restrictive ones that I've seen so far from his plan is the ammunition count, because in his plan it says like you can't hoard any caliber or gauge of more than 200 rounds. And a lot of gun owners that were responding to the article were saying that that's an average amount that they take when they go to the shooting range. And I can tell you personally from a Marine Corps standpoint, whenever we go to our annual rifle training requirement that we have to do every year, we are given roughly around 180 rounds for six magazines. So that shows how to that number, it's very easy to get to that 200 number, and it seems that it was a very arbitrarily picked 200.
Yeah, I'd love to know actually where that number came from exactly. But, again, I think we're almost supposed to be overwhelmed by the number of gun control ideas offered by Eric Swalwell. Here's Swalwell yesterday talking about more of his plans for our Second Amendment.
At the point of sale for a firearm, first, we believe any person who purchases a firearm should have to undergo a licensing procedure. Gun ownership is a right, but it is a right that comes with responsibilities. And just like you get a permit in many places to hunt and in every state to drive, we think you need a license if you're going to buy a firearm. We also put in place additional restrictions at the point of sale on ammunition, as well as requiring insurance.
Okay, so he acknowledges it's a right. But then before you can exercise this right, Julio, the government has to give you it's okay. Now, if the government has to say it's okay, to me, that's not a right. All of a sudden, now that is a privilege that requires prior approval by the government. If it's a right, the default is you can do it. What Eric Swalwell seems wants to do is flip that idea on its head. And so the default is you can't do it unless the government says it's okay.
Right, exactly. And that's where a lot of gun owners that I've talked to or that I've seen in their responses, that's where a lot of the contention is, because they just even get to the point of purchasing a firearm, there's all these extra hoops that Congressman Swalwell wants to implement. And then not only is it going to be a lot of extra hoops to even get to buying a firearm or buying ammunition for it, but it's a matter of enforcement. To go back to the 200 round limit, it's a matter of how are you going to enforce that provision? Are you going to have to? Is it a list of people, and you're keeping track of how many rounds that they're buying per purchase? It's not, obviously it's just the first rollout, so hopefully we can get some more answers on it. But it's not exactly clear on just how they're going to go out and enforce some of these things. Another example
Go ahead, Julio.
Just another example, he wants to ban and buy back bump stocks, suppressors, and any magazine of over 10 rounds. Now, forgetting the fact that bump stocks are now already banned because of President Trump, but that just the amount of money that's going to take, because assault rifles, as he puts it, is one thing, and that's going to cost a lot of money. But to also do all those accessories of bump stocks, suppressors, and over 10-round magazines, that's going to cost a lot of money, and just like a lot of with other 2020 Democrats with some of their proposals for like healthcare and free college tuition, it's a matter of, well, how are you going to pay for that? And this is just another example of a 2020 Democrat proposing an idea that's going to be really, really expensive if they want to go ahead and through with it.
Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, we've got another soundbite, one more here from Eric Swalwell, where he talks about the actual enforcement of his gun ban in particular. To me, it sounds like he's really, really uncomfortable talking about the actual enforcement of these laws. But take a look here.
There will be a window for people to sell their weapon to the government. We'll pay market rate for it. I think that will still be less than the cost of loss that a community suffers because of a mass shooting. And just like anything else that's banned, like a fully automatic weapon or a rocket-propelled grenade launcher or any other contraband in America, if you have it, there'll be a criminal penalty. But there's not going to be any national roundup. It's just, it's going to be banned, and I trust that the American people, by and large, are lawmaking, law-abiding people, and they'll sell back their guns. Or, there is an exception, you can keep an assault weapon at a shooting range or hunting range.
I don't even know what a hunting range is. So there you go. You can you know, keep it at somewhere else where it's not under your control. Somehow that's safe. Or you can face some sort of criminal penalty. Again, really vague, Julio, as to what that penalty is going to be. To me, it seems like, you know, again, you just noted how deeply specific Eric Swalwell's proposals are with that one glaring exception, right? There's really nothing in there about what happens if those Americans decide, Eric Swalwell, I'm going to engage in an act of civil disobedience, and I'm not going to turn my fireman, I'm not going to turn my magazine, and I'm not going to buy some sort of mandatory insurance, I'm not going to apply for a license to exercise my rights.
Yes, exactly. And just another example of that is a matter of whether or not that they will, because we do know, because Jake Tapper had a grill Swalwell saying, you know, what is going to happen? Are you going to criminally prosecute them? That could be the jail time. And Swalwell said, yes, that is a possibility. And then he quickly followed up with, you can store it at a hunting club or gun range. And unfortunately, I'm going to have to disagree with Swalwell, because, again, a lot of the gun owners and Second Amendment enthusiasts that I've seen, they kind of all had the same running joke of, like, oh, well, I just happened to lose all my firearms in a tragic boating accident. And that's kind of the line that they're going to seemingly go with. So I think he really misunderstands just how important the right to keep and bear firearms is, and certain types of firearms that are not, by definition, assault weapons, how important that is to people, because they see it, like, they know what works for them in terms of their home security or defense, or whether it's hunting, whether it's with an AR-15 or not. And so, and the reason why I think it's important to report on this, because as you mentioned before, he is polling currently at 0%. I'm sure it's early and the debates haven't happened yet, but that's where things stand on now. But the reason why people are saying, you know, just ignore him is kind of misguided, because he is still a member of Congress. And I believe it was last month, he left the door open to run for Congress again in 2020 if the presidential bid doesn't work out. And so even if he doesn't become president, let alone the nominee, it still appears he's going to be in Congress, and he's still going to be pushing for this type of legislation. And you know, obviously, there's only going to be one Democrat. So depending on who it is, he is going to have some support with some of the other candidates if they don't become the nominee, whether it's, you know, Gillibrand or Warren or Booker or Sanders, yep, or Harris, yep, or Klobuchar. So
don't name them all, Julio. We've only got half an hour.
Yeah. So
you can't name them all.
But listen,
Julio, I hate to do it, buddy, but we've got to run, unfortunately. I appreciate you coming on the program so much. I'd love to have you on again. But and thank you again for covering this, because you're absolutely right. I don't care if Eric Swalwell's polling at 0% in the polls. Some of these ideas, perhaps many of these ideas, are going to be touted by the eventual Democratic nominee, no matter who they are. Julio Rosas joins us from the Washington Examiner. Thank you again, sir, for your time. Now, we've got coming up here in just a couple of weeks a special session in Richmond, Virginia, called by our Governor Ralph Northam in the wake of the murders in Virginia Beach at a city hall building. And Governor Ralph Northam is proposing a whole host of gun control laws. I'm sure all of them would be approved by Eric Swalwell. None of them, however, would have prevented this attack. And, you know, Governor Northam, he acknowledges on some level that that's the case, but he's still willing to use these murders in Virginia Beach to push for laws that wouldn't have prevented those murders in Virginia Beach. I find some of the rhetoric by anti-gun advocates to be kind of concerning. You know, when they'll do stuff like that, when Eric Swalwell says he promises to end gun violence, not continue the dramatic reduction of violent crime that we've seen over the past 25 years, but to eradicate it completely. I think that is nonsense, but I think it is also a preying on the baser emotions that we all have Again, we all want a safer society, but Eric Swalwell doesn't want to tell you that society's been getting safer. Ralph Northam doesn't want to tell you that the gun control laws that he's promoting and pushing would not have prevented the attack that prompted this special session in the first place. So in Richmond, Virginia, there was a recent meeting held last night, as a matter of fact. Richmond's mayor was there. Senator Tim Kaine was there. And this was sort of an attempt to drum up interest and support among their base heading into this special session on July the 9th. There are going to be other events held throughout the state of Virginia between now and July the 9th as well. One of the individuals who is there, who showed up on her own accord last night, Dr. Sheila Fury, who's a psychiatrist in the Richmond, Virginia area, and she joins us on the program right now. Dr. Fury, thank you so much for your time today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So I have to ask, what made you decide that you wanted to go to this meeting last night?
Because I wanted to make sure that all sides of the issue were held and discussed. We hear a lot about gun violence, and as a psychiatrist, as a mother, as a woman who advocates for people who have been victims of violence, it was important that my voice as well as their voices be heard. And it was critical that it wasn't just one-sided. And my fear was that this would be a one-sided discussion.
So that if you hadn't been there, would it have been a pretty one-sided discussion?
Yes, only two opposing views were allowed. And that was
unbelievable.
And it was not a discussion of what happened in Virginia Beach and the situation that unfolded in Virginia Beach. It was about preordained or their assessment of what should happen. It didn't talk about that the man who committed the crime in Virginia Beach had previously been assaultive in the workplace and no charges were pressed against him. Had charges been pressed against him, his guns would have been legally removed and this event wouldn't have happened.
But that didn't come up. Again, this was, you're right, this wasn't about the specifics. Again, this is about these gun control proposals, which have been introduced, by the way, in the state legislature time and time again, year after year. In fact, we're all voted on and voted down this session. And it's about, it sounded to me like this was almost sort of a, not a campaign rally, but an issue rally. I mean, it really seemed like Senator Kaine and Mayor Stoney there were urging those supporters to get active, get involved. It wasn't really a roundtable as much as it seemed like it was a rally.
Correct. And one of the things that they wanted was to eliminate bullets or make the cost of bullets prohibited to the average person from going out to the range and practicing so that they are a competent gun owner. They also wanted to put serial numbers on bullets so that they could be traced. And instead of saying that guns were the problem, they simply said bullets were the problem.
Do you remember offhand who it was that actually talked about bullet serialization? Was it one of those elected officials?
It was not one of the elected officials, but it was someone that was there at the meeting.
Okay. I can breathe a little bit easier. So I want to ask Dr. Fury, I mean, as a psychiatrist yourself, you know, clearly this was not about mental health. This was about gun control, but When you see situations like what happened in Virginia Beach, you just talked about had charges been filed previously, maybe that individual would have lost the ability to legally own firearms. It seems to be like mental health is really just sort of lost in the discussion. And if it does get talked about, it's either institutionalizing people, or we get discussion about these red flag laws, which I think are gun control laws that are sort of billed as mental health bills. But the broader aspect of just, you know, again, that almost that day-to-day mental wellness and the resources that are available to individuals long before they fall off the cliff and they get to that point where they are, you know, willing to take their own lives and the lives of innocent people, it seems to me like we need to be paying some more attention to what we can do there.
I think that's a very good point. And one of the issues is we don't have forced mental health, right? And there's also a shortage of psychiatrists, and in particular, a shortage of child psychiatrists. And so we have people who have tried to get help, but are the resources available to them are limited, or the person doesn't want to follow up and is resistant to mental health. And we can't, in this state and around the country, force people to attend mental health sessions. Mm-hmm. And that's something that can be looked at. However, if a person is being violent, if they are threatening violence, we can, at that point, you can go to your local law enforcement. If you're in a school and someone is threatening to harm you, you can press charges against that person. And it is not waiting until something happens until you make the step to press charges, of doing that way beforehand. When they're initially making those threatening comments, they're saying, you know, I could kill you, or being aggressive, you know, pushing people around, putting their hands up. Those things happen long before an actual shooting occurs in many instances. And those are situations where they can be pulled into the court system and a tighter rein can be put on them in order to assure the safety of people around them.
Again, talking with Dr. Sheila Furie about this meeting last night. And as I've said, there are going to be other meetings. In fact, there's another meeting taking place tonight in the Richmond area, isn't there?
Yes, there's a meeting tonight on South Main Street, I believe, and it started at 5:30.
Okay. So, you know, again, the folks who want these bills to become law, they are out there trying to raise awareness and trying to raise support in the weeks before the special session. Dr. Furie, I really appreciate you joining me on the program. Thank you so much for your insight. Thank you for your interest in this issue as well. And I hope we get a chance to talk again.
My pleasure. Good luck in all you do.
Thank you so much. Dr. Sheila Furie joining us here on Cam and Company. All right. So Philadelphia, a city where I remember, this was probably about a decade ago, former Mayor John Street, when the homicide rate started rising, he actually blamed this on concealed carry holders, said we're not going to issue any more concealed carry licenses. And back then, you actually had reporters who were willing to call out politicians because one of them asked the mayor, well, how many of these homicides have been committed by a concealed carry holder? How many violent crimes have been committed by a concealed carry holder? And the answer was none. But concealed carry holders were a convenient scapegoat. We haven't heard that from the mayor or the DA yet. But I'm not holding my breath because it was a very violent weekend in Philadelphia this past weekend. More people shot in the city of brotherly love than in any 48-hour period in at least 3 years. And the police commissioner, Richard Ross, yesterday questioning whether or not individuals who are illegally carrying firearms, illegally using them in the commission of violent crimes, are getting off scot-free and are feeling emboldened, feeling again like they have no consequences. He said, if you feel there are no consequences for illegally carrying firearms, there are many people who will disregard the law because they're not worried about it. Not because we're not arresting them. He says we have to see why these people are carrying them in the fashion that they are. Now, he was pressed again on whether he was suggesting that the district attorney, Larry Krasner's office, is being too light on these individuals. He declined to say, saying that he did not know how many gun cases might be in with a figurative slap on the wrist or if any individual office was responsible. But the DA has come under fire. This is a fairly new DA, got elected in November of last year, and ran on not just a platform of criminal justice reform, but wanting to, quote, curb mass incarceration. As the Philadelphia Inquirer has noted, he has received criticism from the police union, whose leader, John McNesby, has accused him of having, quote, great disdain for law enforcement and siding with accused criminals over victims. The U.S. attorney there in Philadelphia, William McSwain, has also been critical of the DA there in Philly, saying that the city has a, quote, full-blown public safety crisis due to the policies of its district attorney. And the U.S. attorney, by the way, has said his office has increased violent crime prosecutions as a result, which is good. Typically, you're going to get tougher sentences at the federal level. But again, it's a limited amount of resources. And so hopefully the worst offenders are now being targeted by the U.S. attorney's office if the DA in Philadelphia is not doing his job. Meanwhile, the chief there says that the police department studying all aspects of gun cases and their progression through the criminal justice system to identify possible trends that could be useful to all stakeholders. He says, quote, we want to make sure that we're all working together and that there are no unintentional consequences or policies or other things that we're trying to do in the city that may impact us negatively. Again, you know, you can have whatever gun laws you want on the books. Frankly, I don't think gun laws are effective in reducing violent crime. But certainly, if you're not going to prosecute the violent criminals in your midst, guess what's going to happen to the crime rate? Yeah, that's right. It's not going to go down. All right, let's get to today's hero of the day, as well as our good guy of the day. Hero of the day from Dothan, Alabama, and the Dothan Eagle. Incident happened on Sunday. Police say an individual, Zyquan Corbett, allegedly drove his car to the 700 block of North Rain Street. There's Zyquan right now. Began firing shots at an individual with whom he had had an ongoing dispute. Dothan Police Lieutenant Lynn Watkins says once Corbett began firing shots at the victim took cover and fired shots back towards Corbett. Corbett was shot once in the forearm and once in the upper right buttocks area. The victim received no injuries. Adding charges to injury, Corbett charged with first-degree attempted assault following his release from a local hospital where he was treated for the two gunshot wounds. No charges filed against the victim. Corbett, by the way, already out. Yep, Sunday, the crime happened. It's now Tuesday, and Corbett is already out of jail on a pretty remarkable $15,000 bond. Our good guy of the day brought to you by our friends at Odor Crusher. Scary moments for an officer in Batavia, New York, Daryl Streeter. It was June the 5th. He pulled over a car. Inside the car was a guy named Brandon Fogg, who was a suspect in an open investigation. Streeter started trying to talk to him. Then Fogg tried to run. Streeter took him down. He said he had the suspect face down on the ground when he said, I saw a handgun pull out from under his belly and being pointed basically at my head. Officer Streeter says he was prepared for the worst, and then a miracle.
I see a foot come down on his wrist, and I see a hand reach down and remove the handgun from there.
Well, that foot and that hand belong to Ralph Bush, who is a veteran. He's a worker at Oatka Milk Products, which is across the street from where this was all occurring. He was finished his shift heading home. He says, I turned to leave. I looked in my rearview mirror, saw the officer in trouble, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Save that officer's life now. Officer Streeter says we'll be friends for the rest of our lives. Not that guy, though. He's probably going to be doing some time behind bars. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Cam and Company. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow, 5:30 Eastern, right here on NRA TV.